This is Day to Day from NPR News. I'm Alex Chadwick.
And I'm Madeline Brand. Alex, you know that iPod ad with the black silhouette that's bopping to some music on his or her iPod?
Yeah.
Well, what do you think that person's listening to?
Not Perry Como. Beyonce?
Well, you never know. Maybe so. But whatever that person's bopping to, the song probably wasn't bought on iTunes. It turns out that the average iPod user isn't downloading much music from iTunes. That's also owned by Apple Computer. Forrester Research, a tech consulting company, says the typical iPod contains only about 20 songs purchased from iTunes.
Ooh.
Yeah. Josh Burnoff did the research for Forrester.
I and all the other people who were predicting the online music market back 5 years ago assumed that every single user of MP3 player would be generating music sales through stores like iTunes. And while there do appear to be sales, and there are quite a few, they've sold more than a billion tracks over at Apple, 20 songs per person was certainly not the expectation of the industry, and it's not enough to nearly make up for the decrease in CD sales that has happened in the last 5 years.
So who does this hurt? Does this hurt the music industry, or does it hurt Apple?
Well, Apple makes nearly all of its money in this space on selling iPods, and iPods are selling like mad, so they don't have a problem there. On the other hand, the music industry really hoped that online music would make up for that shortfall, and it's clear the music labels are not going to see anywhere near the sales coming from electronic music.
So what are people doing instead?
File sharing using networks like Kazaa and BitTorrent continues to happen. And, of course, there's lots of people who are ripping the CDs they already have. So you have these iPods that are full of hundreds or thousands of songs, but there's only a few dozen in there that were actually bought from the iTunes store.
So people are listening to their old CDs. Well, if once they get sick of those CDs, will they, do you think, begin buying more from iTunes and online?
Well, we have an awful lot of evidence now. We've got 5 years of experience with iPods and nearly that much experience with iTunes. At this point, I think it's unlikely that there's going to be some sort of incredible change in people's behavior. That is, unless there's a significant change in the way that music is sold. So a lot of music labels are suggesting selling unprotected music as opposed to the iTunes music, which is protected by digital rights technology. That might get people to move. But unless there's some sort of change now, I don't really think we're going to see a whole lot of difference in the way people buy music in the future.
You mentioned BitTorrent and Kazaa. Does that mean there's a healthy underground, to put it benignly, movement or piracy movement going on in music?
Whether you consider it healthy depends on whether you like sales without any payment. There is absolutely trading going on. Seems to be actually somewhat decreased from its heyday, but there's certainly a huge market in free music. Some people have said that the iTunes store deserves praise because every song that's bought on there is an actual profit-making activity as opposed to people who are downloading it for free. And I agree with that. It's just a question of how that compares. And certainly for every song that's paid for in iTunes, there are dozens and dozens of songs that are ripped off for free from sites like BitTorrent.
Josh Burnoff of Forrester Research, thanks a lot.
Good to talk to you.
And for the people who are getting their music from iTunes, the number one download is Beyonce. Alex, I can't believe it. You were totally right.
It's completely hot, yes.
It's her song, Irreplaceable.
All right, and there's more than music on your iPod. If you have something called the Nike Plus iPod Sport Kit, this thing goes in your shoe and connects to your iPod, and then there's a little voice that comes over your music, and it tells you how far you've run and calories and such. Sounds neat, but reporter Jeff Rice says a team of graduate students at the University of Washington has found out the Sport Kit raises privacy concerns.
The Nike Plus iPod Sport Kit features a small built-in pedometer that sends radio signals to an iPod Nano. As you run, a motivational voice gives you updates on things like your pace, distance and calories burned.
11 minutes, 16 seconds completed. Distance, 0.22 miles. Current pace, 8.52 per mile.
One of the people who bought the shoe iPod combo was Scott Soponis, a graduate student in computer science at the University of Washington.
And I started using it to track my runs. It even helped me motivate to run more.
It's just the kind of gadget that appeals to Scott, who's a student of what is known as ubiquitous computing.
The idea is looking at interfaces for computers for the next generation of computing applications. It occurred to me that it's possible that applications like this could potentially be leaking information. I don't want it to leak.
So he fears that devices like this pedometer, which sold almost 500,000 units in its first few months, are a privacy concern. Consider Scott's shoes. Right now, the little seemingly innocuous shoe pedometer is sending out all kinds of information, not just that he's running at a 7-minute pace or how many calories he's burning.
I've burned 49 calories in the course of this interview, according to my Nike Plus iPod Sport Kit.
As part of a class project, Scott and two other graduate students have shown that the shoe sends out a potential tracking signal.
So what happens is, if with the sensor in my shoe, when I start walking around, it starts broadcasting a unique identifier. So we can.
Soponis and the other members of the study team, Carl Hartung and Jonathan Lester, are looking at a Google Earth image on a large screen.
Well, no, we need to plug it into the speakers.
Every time Soponis runs around the room or simply taps his foot, his location shows up on the map. A code sent by the pedometer in the shoe travels anywhere from 10 to 60 feet. A hacker with a basic knowledge of soldering could place a small receiver at strategic locations, let's say next to a running path, or
one at the dorm, one at the gym, one at the cafeteria, a place where the person is likely to be.
The signal can then be plugged into a computer and tracked. Some critics say those scenarios are far-fetched. Apple refused to comment for this story, while Nike issued this written statement.
Nike takes consumer privacy very seriously. The Nike Plus iPod Sport Kit features the same level of security as millions of other wireless consumer electronics devices, such as mobile phones, Bluetooth devices, and cordless phones. Should the consumer have any concerns, the sensor can easily be turned off or removed.
But privacy advocates say those millions of consumer electronic devices that Nike mentions may just be the big issue in all of this. University of Washington professor Yoshi Kono, who co-authored a paper with the students about the potential security problems, says this is about a broader issue.
So I think one of the purposes of our study was just to understand the trends in modern technology. And what we found was that modern technology is still coming out that don't fully address a broad spectrum of privacy issues.
Li Tian, a lawyer with the nonprofit advocacy group the Electronic Frontier Foundation, calls this kind of thing a form of privacy pollution. A single product is one thing, but millions of everyday devices are another.
The real question that we have to face is, do we want this kind of technology and the attitude that comes with it to be the way things are over the next 10, 15, 20 years? Because if everyone thinks that way, then we're probably guaranteed that the social environment will be very dense with tracking devices that have no security, and will also be dense with readers. Let's look at the big picture. It's a marathon, not a sprint.
For NPR News, I'm Jeff Rice in Seattle.